Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, and I'll be your inner voice as I break down all the shows we watched together this week. No shame, no regret, just wanting all the reality we can get. Remember to check the show notes for how to find me and the rest of our chosen people. Facebook and Instagram, Welcome to Reality TV, and Twitter at Reality TV Pod. And for bonus episodes, head on over to patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. And now, on with the show. Hey, 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 welcome back. It's Monday. I gotta tell you, I knew I missed Sister Wives, but I didn't know how badly I needed Sister Wives back in my life. It's a new year, it's January. I have a newly invigorated sense of disgust and hate and skepticism that, sadly, I thought I had exhausted after 90 Day Fiancé. But oh no, 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 no. TLC had other plans for us apples. And when I realized this season was going to gift us with a review of all the trappings of one of the most questionable and ill-conceived weddings in the Sister Wives Dome, the same wedding that brought so many of us joy to follow and pick apart a year ago, and Tony. God damn it, this season is going to be fun. I actually kind of forgot about him. So let's put Mary in a timeout in her wet bar with a banana and an episode of Catfish while we catch up with Christine. We meet up with Christine in her kitchen. She's feverishly preparing a big old dinner she's hosting for McKelty, Tony, and Tony's family. Her main dish of choice on a sweltering Las Vegas summer day? Lasagna! And a disgusting looking one at that. She had a good solid inch of ricotta cheese, which I cannot stand, piled into that thing. And we come to find out that she's making two varieties. Wait a second. This isn't Top Chef. Christine, you saucy little thing. Pray tell, what are you making? Apparently, she has a lasagna with meat in it that is something really exotic called white mozzarella cheese on top, and another vegetarian lasagna with yellow cheddar on top. Hopefully Truly was around to just fling forkfuls under the table. Well, what's the special occasion? Tony and McKelty have been engaged for 5 months or something like that. He proposed and almost pushed her off that cliff while they were hiking last season, and he was wearing that really pretty bandana on his head. So his parents and grandparents are coming over so the families can meet. And I quote, have a mixing of the cultures. Oh God. Christine's idea of mixing cultures was dusting off her Mexican-looking ceramic serving dishes to serve Wonder Bread garlic sticks and yummy cheddar cheese with marinara lasagna. Ugh. It's clear on the couch. We're just going to refer to their interview time as their time on the couch. It's clear that Mary just rolled in from, what's it called, Puxatawney or whatever, because she has no fucking clue what's going on. So they're very slowly explaining to the Cowardly Lion that Tony's parents, Maria and Antonio, were born in Mexico, so they speak Spanish. Whoa. Well, this one throws Mary for a motherfucking loop. Well, then where's Tony born? Wait, so where did his parents get married and then they came here? Yes, Mary, it's called fucking immigration. Her brain must be fried to the same extent as her leathery skin and crispy wisps of hair. Fuck. Christine is fretting and anxious because she pretty much spent all last season explaining all the perfectly good reasons she didn't like or trust Tony. And she's worried that his parents may have seen it and they're going to be mad at her for throwing some serious shade towards their son, Tony. Quick refresher for those of you who forgot or didn't watch previous seasons. Tony is just a cocky, fumbling, he's got no filter, blob of a millennial. His plan for Cody and company to afford this wedding of theirs was for them to take out another mortgage. And he almost set a kitchen on fire, didn't he, if I remember that correctly? That whole episode was just a blur because I think it was in that same episode at the rental house when Gwendolyn or Aspen, one of them walked into that glass door. Oh my God, and that was it. I couldn't even see through my tears of laughter. But basically, we think Tony is a lazy loaf of thick hair and greasy Cheeto fingers. Actually, you know what? I take that back. I don't think he's Cheeto. I think he's more of a Doritos Cool Ranch kind of guy. But he does what I call the five-finger pop, like the Curly Sue move, just sucking each finger clean to just gross, like a monster. Well, speaking of monsters, Tony's siblings arrive early to help because the Browns don't have 15 other kids running around to help. So his sister Karina is there, and his brother Lito is, Lito is the love child of Andre the Giant and Bruce Valanche. You may remember Bruce Valanche from a little show called Hollywood Squares. Trust me on this one. Well, Cody is just as miffed as we are why the three amigos are there to help, because he says they're not going to be much help, and I quote, "They all just watch you, like Tony." As much as I cannot stand Cody, his one-liners about Tony are killing me. He may look like a caveman with a Mary wig on, but he ain't wrong on his assessments of Tony. Well, Tony thunders in and plops his ass in dirty, thinned-out jeans on Christine's love seat, while Karina and Bruce choose the side chairs from the set of Gulliver's Travels. Those chairs. If you are a devout Sister Wives watcher, you know those chairs. They're like dining chairs, but the backs are about 9 or 10 feet tall, and I am in no way exaggerating. I needed to know if they were purchased from a set of a movie, because there was only two of them, and they used to be at Robin's house. So that led me to dive a little deeper, trying to find the answer, which led me to watching the Sister Wives home tour videos on TLC. Well, I found out Cody bought those chairs from a consignment store. He just had to have them. He loved them. Napoleon complex, anyone? Now, forget about the chairs for just a moment. If you do anything today, please go and watch these home tour videos on TLC.com. Janelle takes us for a tour, and she tells us that she went for a truck stop theme for her kitchen, and she also opted for an extra bathroom instead of a laundry room, but the laundry room hookups are still just in the wall. Yeah, you gotta go watch. Mary's bedroom, we get a little tour. She has Victorian dolls on stands. It's just so worth it. These women cannot decorate. I wouldn't trust them to decorate a frat house. It's just incredible. Well, back to Christine's house and the moving of furniture. Bruce and Tony and the sisters start collecting the Sam's Club dining tables from all the houses so they can make a huge table at Christine's house. This was the time I first realized that they all had matching tables, which shouldn't be that surprising considering they share the same dick. Shinnari to complete their family mission statement. This table issue becomes a huge plot point for a solid 20 minutes. I don't understand because they've hosted a huge Thanksgiving before. Remember that Janelle had a big panic attack because she was supposed to make the centerpieces and be all crafty, and then Mary gaslighted her at her wet bar by making some examples as just some suggestions. Well, they don't know what to do because Tony's family speaks Spanish, and living in a town called Las Vegas hasn't taught them anything about interacting with people who speak a different language or were born in a different country. Gee golly, what's that like? I mean, what could be more awkward, though, than a language barrier? Tony knows.
Naked men are sometimes more awkward than a language barrier.
Swallow, Tony. He's had that same fucking bubble in his throat for a year. Get that kid a neti pot, a Zyrtec, maybe see an ear, nose, throat doctor, because there is some kind of blockage in his throat. Now, maybe it's adenoids. See something, say something. I might be saving his life. Like that viewer who told the flipper flop guy, the one that looks like an iguana, didn't he have like a throat tumor or something? Well, hey, maybe Tony's family will consider me an idol, like some of them believe Cody is one, because he has many wives. Christine thinks they think Cody is the shit. And there it is. Christine swears. I love the newly medicated Christine. Now that she's clearly on some kind of mood stabilizers, she seems like she might be fun to be around. I said might. We get a little couch time with McKelty and Tony, and while McKelty thinks she's being interviewed as if they are Wills and Kate, she's trying to use big words and sound very purposeful and smart, and Tony's just sitting there spilling out of his Walmart video game t-shirt, kind of like Gary on Teen Mom's Belden lineman shirt. And the producers start playing this goofy xylophone ping, pong, ping, ping, pong, ping music while they ask Tony if he ever has considered polygamy. Well, they both answer no because, yeah, I'm sure it never occurred to him that he'd even get laid once, let alone take several brides. Back to the United Nations summit at Christine's, Cody is freaking the hell out. His thin wisps of hair remaining are frizzing out. No one can figure out how to seat 27 people around the table. Cody cannot take this logistics talk and withhold his hate of tubby Tony and Bruce, so he sits down so he can fully take it in and fat shame them. It's so tight. There's no way Tony and Lito can sit next to each other. Okay, I see you. Well, not to leave his wives out and only show his disdain for the chubbies, he pulls the card that would have caused Christine to slit his throat pre-psych eval and prescription for Xanax. We will not sit elbow to elbow at this table. This was planned by an emotional woman, not an engineer. What do you say? Shall we feed him to Oprah now? Hashtag time's up. Now, I'm no engineer, but here's a solution. A few kids sit on the couch with a fucking Chinette plate and you call it a night. Boom, done. Well, you know what? We've been talking way too much about Cody and his wives anyway. Let's learn about the happy couple. McKelty, tell us a little bit about Tony. Tony likes to make fun of racial things, religious things. We like to get things out of the way. Tony's the elephant in the room. I mean, what can I even say to that? He likes to make fun of racial things, religious things. We just like to get it out of the way. He really doesn't hold back about anything. Like the Tecelte drink Christine made, made out of orange and coconut water because it's their favorite flavors. And Tony says,
orange is our favorite flavor?
Can you just shut your mouth and say thank you for once and stop darting those creepy eyes around? Cody makes this bizarre speech about having a lasting and developing, hint, you barely know each other, for the love of fucking God, can you slow down? And they're going to create a contract, blah, blah, blah. With some added cowboy background music now, McKelty explains that Cody wants them to have a set contract of what they want out of marriage, how many kids they're going to have. Ah, fuck it, says Tony. God is going to smite you and only give you 2 kids when you want 3. Smite. Smite is not a word, Tony. We learn that McKelty was always in trouble and that she had a close relationship with Satan when she was little. Satan was her invisible friend. Hilarious. Satan made me do it. Satan has control of my hands. yeah, hilarious. We get a visit from Truly, because no one asked for it. And Truly says, I'm not excited because I already did it at Maddie's wedding. I feel like Truly is too young this season just to tell her to fuck off, right? Okay, yeah, I'll hold off. Now we get to go visit some wedding venues because McKelty still thinks she's entitled to this, and she thinks she is Utah's Meghan Markle and Tony is my husband in my heart, Harry. First up in St. George, Utah, Bloomington Country Club with coordinator Tanya. Someone should probably check in on Tanya because she wanted to run out of there like a gazelle during that entire tour. Now we get the nitty-gritty details on this wedding. First up, no alcohol. What? I'd hope that they would have put that shit on an invite because I'd be pissed if I showed up to your wedding with a gift and all I'm getting is some banquet tacos. Hell no. Tony also wants to have lanterns like Entangled. His reference, not mine. Tony referencing Disney cartoons made me throw up in my mouth a little. Turns out this isn't so strange for Tony because these sober Sallys consider Tony a party animal, and this is his big ol' shindig. He even picked out the wedding colors. Once again, those of us who follow this disaster closely know this wedding actually happened last December, like 2016, over a year ago. So we know how Uggs McGee this thing was. The colors of this Mexican vintage wedding are maroon, silver, teal, and yellow. An outdoor Mexican vintage wedding with maroon, silver, teal, and yellow in Utah in December. Once again, gifts in the mail, no open bar, your tacos are burning. Hey, is Tanya hiding in the bar taking shots yet? Because guess what? McKelty and Tony are planning to invite 500 people. And those people are going to bring plus ones and families. But they think only about half will come, so 400 people. 400 people. Cody almost busted a stitch on his embellished jeans, as did I. So they head in to talk about how much this is going to be. But don't worry, Dad. We're going to homemake a lot of things. Homemake? Is that like smite? You mean you will create homemade things or you will craft or make things at home? Ugh. And in addition to these thousands that they're going to be spending at Michael's and Hobby Lobby to homemade things that probably could be purchased ready-made for far less, They only want authentic tacos and burritos served by food trucks and food stands with homemade tortillas. You see, Tony doesn't want any of those white people tacos that you get at McKelty's house. You know, the hard shell, taco meat, shredded cheese. These fucking idiots don't understand how country clubs and banquet halls work. Pretty much any wedding venue, it's a given that they're probably going to have their own catering company or inside kitchen that does it. Most places are not going to be allowing you to just bring in your own shit. Yes, I know some do, but clearly it's not the places that they are looking at. Tanya tells Cody, who's practically hyperventilating into a paper bag at this point, that it's $26 to $32 per person for a plated meal. And I was like, fucking shit. That's like half the cost of what our very average wedding was 12 years ago. But no alcohol. But still, that sounds low to me. Tony butts in to quiet all these idiots down about catering costs because he knows tacos.
The only actual cost of tacos is the meat.
Fucking zip it, Kermit. Ugh, God, I thought I hated him last year, but this is nothing. With taco talk aside, now McKelty starts baiting for some drama about who is going to be the officiant. Tanya, can I have any officiant I want? Can the officiant say anything he wants? I mean, Tanya's like, I don't give a fuck about your fucking officiant. You know she's hoping that they would have passed and just chosen another place. Just the way they talk about her, like she's going to be the person to plan the wedding. No, that's not how it works. They coordinate the stuff that's facilitated by the country club. They're not planning your fucking wedding and who is saying what. You hire a separate wedding planner for that. Ugh, God, again, we got to check on her. Maybe send her a fruit basket. Now, why all this officiant talk? Well, the fiancés are going to make a pit stop at Family Pawn, where these two selfish, ignorant twits met and fell in love. They're going to ask their friend and boss, Chris, to officiate their wedding. McKelty never even really thought about Cody officiating their wedding, and Chris and Cody are good friends, so her dad's not going to mind that his daughter's choosing an owner of a pawn shop over him. You know, the person who raised her and is paying for the whole wedding. Cody will be proud that she chose someone else. I gotta say, I think I was kind of like, yikes. I kind of felt bad for Cody, and I've never felt bad for him before. I don't know if it was all the taco talk or the overworking of Tanya, but these two are some real assholes. So they enter the shop and they ask Chris if he can step away from the counter so they can talk to him. So he steps away and walks behind another counter. Did you catch that too? He clearly thought that they were just there to buy some wedding rings from him because he even had them pulled out to look at. So they drop this bomb on him and ask him if he'd officiate. And he's clearly stunned. He's like, why me? Sure, I'd be honored. But who's going to talk to you about the birds and the bees? Oh, that crazy Chris. Oh, he's so silly, am I right? He tells us, when a man and a woman love each other, you have the sperm and the egg, you know? And then it occurred to me, I don't even think Chris does know about the birds and the bees because there's an awful lot of stuff that comes before, during, and after that. But he made sure to get that, you need a wedding band? Because we got them here at Family Pawn. Come on down. Then the TLC polygamist and quiverful families collided because McKelty went in for a hug, you know, her good old St. George dad, and he denied her. He went in for a side hug. Side hugs for all at the Family Pawn. Now McKelty and Tony meet up with the moms and Cody at the next location. And they say that they just got out of a meeting with Chris, which, I mean, that was a stretch. And they break the news that they asked Chris to officiate. All the moms are happy, but you can tell Cody is hurt. Tony just continuing to think that Cody is an FDIC bank just funding his damn taco truck dreams, and Chris is now his sous chef. Inside, we meet up with Kimber, who's hiding behind the counter in case she catches polygamy. This place was really, really pretty outside, but not enough room for 400 people and Tony's 4,000 tacos. You know, he figures 10 tacos per person. I mean, I'm a healthy eater, but no way in hell could I eat 10 tacos. I'm tapping out at 3. You know what? Then again, if I showed up to a wedding with a gift and I'm squeezing myself into a pair of Spanx that night and no open bar, I'm taking some tacos to go. I'm getting my money's worth. Well, this place also has a large bathroom, but no room for a bride to get ready in. And honestly, at first, I was with the sister wives, like, what the fuck is that about? But you know what? Most people getting married at a golf course, they aren't getting ready there. Like, you get ready at home or the hotel or wherever, and then you go there. But since these dorks haven't choreographed a dance party to throw, they all pile into the handicap stall, trying to be all funny, and then Tony yells, wait, I need a tampon. And like a pin drop, everyone's like, what? And then he's like, what? It's probably going to happen. Yeah, Tony, that's how it works. We all just start our periods randomly because we're in close proximity to each other. Is this like the same thing? Like guys thinking that we all dance around in our bras and get naked during sleepovers? Like we all just get together and ask each other for tampons, what our fantasy date's going to be? Well, clearly Kimber doesn't sell the place. So while she's praying the polygamy away, they sneak out and head to another reception center. There's a huge stairwell that will be perfect for Tony to jokingly push someone down. But it's probably going to happen. McKelty explains that she liked the beautifully constructed metal arbor. Okay, Bob Vila. And then they follow the pink pant-suited woman to the dance floor. Cody seemed to enjoy trying to do the moonwalk, but no one else will be doing anything close to that because a sober dance floor is, well, I can't even give you an analogy because I have never seen one, ever. So they move on to the groom's room and Tony lays his ass all over the couch and he's excited because there's a fridge for his fucking coconut water and you can hook up an Xbox. But Christine is not happy about the possibility of him jerking off over Call of Duty on her daughter's wedding day. But that was nothing to her unhappiness when she learns of McKelty and Tony's funny little game they're going to play at the reception. They're going to have life-size piñatas of themselves. Wonder if they're going to home make those or if those are going to be a custom item. And this is going to be hilarious, you guys. Moms, Dad, Tony's going to take a bat and beat the ever-living shit out of the piñata shaped like me. And I'm going to beat his. And we're going to be great, and it's going to bleed out candy. Robin thinks this is no better or worse than smearing your spouse with cake. I disagree. One of them, you're watching your new husband gleefully smash your face in. And the other, he's delivering delicious calories to your mouth. Do I like the cake smashing? No. Did I do it? Hell no. But that's a whole different category to me. Well, which of these venues did they choose? The country club with great landscaping and planner, but limited seating? The golf course with stunning views, but small bathroom? Or the reception center with a beautiful metal arch, but Xbox for the groom to play? They picked the Bloomington Country Club. Yay, let's call Tanya and tell her the great news. God, how fun would that be to watch a House Hunters all together? That would be fun. I got to figure that out. I don't know, Facebook Live or something? All right, well, let's transition to some darker topics. like Mary's soul and matching smoked hickory skin tone. She damn near resembles an aged copper penny at this point, with a marionette-like ability to only move her bottom lip and jaw the slightest bit when talking. Mary is still trying to make us forget about that whole thing where she planned to leave the family and Cody for another man she met on the internet. She and the rest of the cul-de-sac will try and convince you that Mary is a victim. She was brutally victimized by someone who wanted to break up this family for some reason that we still haven't been privy to. So super quick Cliff Notes version for those of you catching up. Mary met a man on social media. They talked and texted all the time. She sent him suggestive photos of her with a banana in her mouth. She met his assistant at Disneyland, and she was making plans to leave the family for the love of her life. Plot twist, there was no man, and it really was a woman all along who was keeping records of all this stuff. The same woman that she had been talking to, thinking it was his assistant. Somehow, Mary managed to convince her family that she didn't do anything wrong. This catfish targeted her and convinced her that she had to talk to him or her, or else her family would be in danger or some shit. Oh, whatever. Even her daughter Mariah was like, bitch, I saw you with that banana. So fast forward to now, and Mary is still playing recovering catfish victim for pity and attention and pouting purposes. So now, present day, or a year ago, but present day for this episode, Annie, Christine's mom, was with Mary in her car on the way to Madison's wedding. And they got to talking about their older relatives and the homes they grew up in. And Mary told Annie about this great house that her great-grandfather built, which was sold out of the family and turned into a bed and breakfast. Mary got a wild hair up her tight jeans, and she's going to talk to the owner named Joyce about purchasing the bed and breakfast back. Annie would live there, she would be the one to run it, and Mary could have a little passion project that makes no money for the family. Kind of like Robin in her My Sister Wives Closet online jewelry store, which somehow manages to stay afloat even with the ugliest inventory you've ever seen with a ridiculous retail price. However, per usual, Mary hasn't talked to anyone about this, only Christine's mom, which is quite the conniving and strategic move on Mary's part to have like this new life and new little secret with your sister wife's mom, the sister wife you don't get along with. Well, Joyce, the owner, gives the ladies a tour of the house. It's all right. It needs a lot of updating, but Mary thinks it's a nice bed and breakfast, but she sees it more as, get ready for this, really unique business idea, a wedding venue. Desperate for any angle to getting this place, she's going to pitch buying the property and an entire business as a potential, maybe if someday one of their 17 kids would want to drive 3.5 hours away to Podunk, Utah to get married in a small backyard. Because Mary wanted it. This is Mary in her wet bar 2.0. Ugh, that fucking wet bar. Hey, wait a second, Tony. Mary's got a wet bar where you can serve up your tacos. She said she needed it for entertaining, for her zero family members who still talk to her. All right, well, wedding venue aside, Mary thinks it's nice for her to have a goal, something to feel passionate about. Maybe setting a goal of putting the tweezers down would be a good place to start instead of real estate. Just an idea. So Annie and Christine are walking through this place. And I mean, ladies, can you at least try to have a poker face? A way to drive that sales price up. They're just giggling and practically making it rain on this lady. But before Mary can sign on that dotted line, she needs to, you know, talk to the other wives and Cody about how they're going to pay for this pretend business lady dream house. In the most satisfying moment of the whole 2 hours, Mary is seen wiping down her wet bar. Drink! And then she calls Robin to come over. Mary frequently talks with Robin before Cody and the other wives, you know, who she's raised children with for the last 20 some odd years, because Robin's patient with me when I want to talk about emotions and things. I don't think that's it. She just hasn't gotten exhausted by you yet. Members of my family struggle to understand me. Robin can help translate for me. Okay. Mary doesn't seem to see a common denominator in every single one of her relationships, does she? Whoever that therapist is that they have, she needs to refer Mary to someone else because Mary seriously needs some intensive therapy. Well, in walks Robin to the living room of armless chairs and couches. Ooh, so comfy. And Mary laughs off, I want to open a bed and breakfast in Parowan, Utah. And just then, Mariah walks in. So now Mary is forced to have this conversation with Mariah around just to call her on her manipulative BS, and I was living for it. You know, whereas Robin would just be her typical codependent, Robin answers, you know, like, where the fuck is Parowan and what the fuck is there to do there? Because it seems like a pretty dead town. And Mariah's asking, how are you going to find the money to buy it? And are you actually going to be making any money? Well, Mary says it's near Brian's Head, which is a huge ski town. Naturally, I dug into that. Turns out Brian's Head is about a 20-minute drive from Parowan. I'm guessing that's in good conditions. I don't know what ski season would be. And it didn't look like that huge of a ski town, considering it has a total population of 83, and it's getting some mixed reviews. It's at this point that producers ask Mary if she wants to talk about how Robin has been getting very close with Christine in the last year. What? Even these sneaky producers are just turning that knife in Mary's back, which she deserves. So Mary says she doesn't want to discuss it because it's hard for me. Why would it be hard for you that your sister wife is also close with another sister wife? That's very middle school. Like, you can only be my friend. And aren't you supposed to all live together in eternity for all your lifetimes or something? I remember that from HBO's Big Love, which was an amazing series. You got to go binge that if you haven't already. But that's the whole premise of sister wives in a polygamous family, right? So Robin basically just tells Mary to be prepared for the rest of the family to be skeptical. They're not going to jump on board right away. They're going to need a minute to think about it. Does it make sense for the family? Can they afford it? So back from break, and Mary must have forgotten that her words can be replayed on tape until the end of the time. This is exactly her words. Just take in the selfishness and the brattiness of this. I want their support. I want them to want this for me. I want their support because if I don't get their support, I can't get the house. Can you even imagine if Janelle came in asking for Mary's blessing on something and said it like that? So Janelle and Christine have clearly bonded over the years, and karma in the form of recorded interviews is a bitch for Mary because both of those women are saying, typical Mary, never calling us. And then when she does, she just wants us to come over and then she drops a bomb on us. And they are totally correct and they are justified in that. So they're all gathered in Mary's living room, not at the wet bar. And Mary spills out the details. They're asking, where the fuck is Parowan? But as soon as she explains that it's her grandmother's house that she grew up in, and surprise, Christine's mom will live there and run it, Christine and Robin are all in. Janelle says she hasn't seen Mary sparkle like this since she deep-throated that banana, but Cody is skeptical. He knows it's 3.5 hours away. Is that going to keep Mary away from the family? I can't tell if this is his reverse psychology of trying to pull her in so she can push him away. But I think all the other wives are totally cool if she finds a new life. We're all tired of her. And Robin doesn't need her anyway now that she's number one wife and she's legally wed to Cody. Well, Mary has hired some consultants this whole time under everyone's noses, which I wonder how much that's costing. And they think Mary can increase the current bed and breakfast occupancy from 20 to 30% to 60%. How exactly? Because I'm with Cody. All right, this is going to be deep, but stay with me here. I spent about 2 hours digging into Iron County, Utah records and information on Parowan. Guys, this is looking dark. First of all the dates from here on out through 2018, I didn't see any dates booked for that place. And Parowan has a booming population of less than 3,000 people. The median income is $30,000. And the Google image search, like the map street view, has a person bending over full ass on display. I'll post it on Instagram or whatever. I know it's not related, but I just enjoy it. Okay, so here's the thing. Mary Brown is the sole owner of this property. I looked at the deeds. I looked at all that stuff. It looks like she purchased it in October 2017, and it looks like she took out loans for $345,000, give or take, if I'm reading the documents correctly. Message me if you are a mortgage guru, and I will send you the screenshot. However, the value of the house is more than $100,000 less than that. I saw the assessor's report. So did she take out a massive loan to cover renovation costs? But it sure doesn't look like it from the pictures. Or is she just going to live on that? But here is the bigger concerning thing. She signed something called a second home rider, stating that this property will be a personal vacation property, not to be rented out, not to have any other resident other than herself. Remember, she said Christine's mom's gonna live there. And there's no record of this being her using it as a commercial property or for a business. Now, I am not accusing mortgage fraud. I'm just asking those of you who may know something, is that legal? Am I reading this correctly? But maybe this is her plan to escape the family. Like, well, I have to live there now or else the mortgage police are going to come and get me. I'm just putting that feeler out there based on my zero knowledge. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Now, two other noteworthy moments last night. Robin calling her daughter Areola, like the nipple. I thought her name was Ari or Ariella, but she clearly said Areola. And for the life of me, I don't understand Mary's word art on her wall. It says, if we are in complete control of our family, somewhere along the line, we have gone terribly wrong. Huh? What? Like, is that supposed to be funny or is it serious? Like, you shouldn't have control over your household. If we are in complete control of our family, somewhere along the line, we have gone terribly wrong. I don't know. I'm so confused. What wordplay am I not getting here? Next week is going to be good because Cody says something like, Mary is ready for an intimate and deep relationship with me, but I'm not. Cody's a fan of wrestling with his friends, but not bananas, I guess. Who knew? That's always a good day with some sister wives snark, isn't it? Later this week, I'll have recaps of Teen Mom OG, Married at First Sight, Love After Lockup, and I'm going to try and squeeze in a recap of Top Chef, but I can't promise you anything for sure. I have a lot going on with my daughter this week. In the meantime, be a delicious apple, rate and leave a review on iTunes. If you're stuck inside in the cold and the snow, listen to some really amazing bonus material on patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. You know where to find me everywhere else. Just click in the show notes. Until next time, stay warm, stay salty.